Let me wish each and every one of you a very happy Friday, and I hope you have a great weekend. Don't forget about the Lord's Day, though. You need to be with your home congregation, worshiping and fellowshipping and praising and praying and serving and studying and encouraging one another to love and good deeds, just like the Scripture says we should be doing. If you don't have a home church where you're doing that sort of stuff, you need to get out there and find a place and start engaging in that sort of activity. If you're actively looking for such a place right now and you're within driving distance of the Elkhart East building, please come check us out. Maybe we can be your home church. Fridays, I also would like to thank all of you who are making it possible for us to stay on the radio. If you would like to help them in that effort, it's easy enough to do. Just write down the contact information you'll hear at the end of today's program, then send your one-time or ongoing gift to that address, and it will be applied to the radio broadcast fees. Thanks for taking care of that. Let's go ahead and open to Genesis chapter 37. Because of time, we had a bit of a cliffhanger last time, although for many of you, you already know this story pretty well. But let's get back into the Word and be amazed at how God can step in and turn a bad situation around into something He can use to accomplish good. So Joseph, you know, is 17 years of age. He is the only working son of Israel, Jacob, right now. He's his baby brother, newborn, is not out there working. His half-brothers that are all within 7 years of him, they are out tending sheep several days away from the tent city at Hebron. And they hate Joseph. They hate him with a passion because dad treats him like he's the heir, since he is the only, he is the firstborn son of the woman that Jacob really loved, Rachel. And she is now a year gone from this life. And he's even been given a coat made of many different colors of fabric. It is fantastic how expensive this clothing might have been, how gaudy it would have been. And he's also been sharing dreams that God is sending him about how he's going to be in charge one of these days. And so they hate him a lot. The Scripture says they can't even say a nice word to him. But dad sends Joseph, like a supervisor, up to check on his brothers at Shechem, about 3 days' travel from Hebron. When he gets there, he finds out that his brothers have decided to move their flocks another day's travel or so to the northwest, to Dothan. So he goes chasing after him there. And then verse 18 happens. They saw him from afar, and before he came near to them, they conspired against him to kill him. So they have murder in their hearts. I shared with you last time, I am curious to know which of the sons of Leah made this suggestion. I wouldn't be one bit surprised if it was either Simeon or Levi, the two who had not very long ago killed all the men in the city of Shechem, just because one of them, a young man, had slept with their full sister Dinah without going through proper procedures of engagement and marriage. So they figure we can take care of him by getting rid of him. They said to one another, here comes this dreamer, come, let's kill him, throw him into one of the pits. Then we'll say that a fierce animal's devoured him, and then we'll see what will become of his dreams. So very, very hateful, very spiteful. Verse 21, when Reuben heard it, now remember, Reuben was the eldest among them, about 24. And he has been recently disinherited as the firstborn because he'd slept with his father's concubine, Bilhah. He seems to maybe be wanting to get back on his dad's good side, or maybe he just understands this is just wrong to kill your brother. It's one thing to not like your brother, not get along with him. It's a whole nother thing to murder him. So verse 21, when Reuben heard it, he rescued him out of their hands, saying, let's not take his life. Reuben said, shed no blood. Just throw him into this pit here in the wilderness. Don't lay a hand on him. So basically, don't you kill him. Let nature take its course. Yeah, go ahead and toss him in this pit that he can't climb out of, and then we'll go on with our lives, and he'll die in there. None of us will be specifically responsible for shedding his blood, but we'll be rid of him. Now, he didn't do this with the intention of letting Joseph die, though, because Moses goes on to tell the rest of the story. He says that he might rescue him out of their hand to restore him to his father. So Reuben's idea was, we'll toss him into the pit. He'll die of hunger and thirst. That's not our problem. That's his. Then we'll tell Dad that something happened to him. But Reuben's plan the whole time was, when his brothers had gone to sleep or his brothers were taking care of something else, he was going to go help Joseph out of that pit and take him back home to Dad and be his rescuer. Now, that's a good plan. And I'm very thankful that Reuben cares about Joseph and about his father like that. But his plan falls apart. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the robe of many colors that he wore, and then they took him into the pit. The pit was empty. There was no water in it. So he is just down in the bottom of this pit, maybe an old cistern, and they were just going to let him die down there. Now, in the meantime, apparently, while the brothers were kind of waiting for him to, you know, expire, Reuben goes to take care of business somewhere else. Maybe he went to make preparations for him and Joseph to travel back to Hebron. After all, it's about 4 days away now. But for some reason, he wasn't around when this next part of the story happens. Verse 25, then they sat down to eat. Now, keep in mind, from later testimony of these young men, the whole time they're sitting there and eating, Joseph is yelling for them to let him out. I'm sure at first it was like, come on, guys, it's not funny anymore. Just let me out of here. I promise I won't say anything to Dad about this. Just come on. But eventually, with his brothers up there laughing about him, maybe talking about, I wonder how long it'll take for him to die. He's going to die a lot sooner if he keeps yelling like that. He's going to use up all his moisture. You know, that sort of nonsense that's going on. He apparently starts begging and pleading and crying. He is scared about what they're doing, that they're going to let him thirst to death down in the bottom of this hole. And the reason we know that is because they later mention that they turned a deaf ear to his pitiable cries from the pit. Now, while all that's happening, looking up, they saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels bearing gum, balm, and myrrh on their way to carry it down to Egypt. Now, the Ishmaelites are their cousins. And the Ishmaelites, they don't necessarily know them. After all, there's probably bunches and bunches of Ishmaelites by now. But the Ishmaelites have decided to become merchants, traveling merchants, moving back and forth, items from one place to another for a profit. Midianites will be mentioned in verse 28. The Midianites are a subgroup of the Ishmaelites. And so they are traders. Eventually, the Ishmaelites become a major part of the Arabian Peninsula tribes. And this trading lifestyle continued way up into the future. In fact, the story of Muhammad revolves around the idea that he, as a distant descendant of Ishmael, took camel trains of merchandise from deep down in Arabia up into Syria. And so this particular camel caravan, though, is coming from the east side of the Jordan River, up on the east side of the Sea of Galilee, where they've tapped trees for their resin to be used in all sorts of things. And they're taking that exclusive product of that area down to Egypt to sell it for a profit. And so Judah, who is the new heir of the bunch, so he's supposed to be the patriarch in waiting. Once granddad and dad have both died, Judah is supposed to be the new patriarch. So Judah said to his brothers as a leader, "What profit is it if we kill our brother and conceal his blood?" Now, up to that point, it sounds as if he was going along with the plan. But then he goes, "Hey, maybe we can make some coin off of it instead of killing him." Verse 27, "Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites. Let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother, our own flesh." So maybe he had some recriminations, maybe he had some second thoughts about the idea of even letting his brother die of dehydration in the bottom of that pit. He'd still bear responsibility for that. So he says, "You know what? Let's just sell him." And so his brothers listened to him. Then Midianite traders passed by. That's the Ishmaelites. They drew Joseph up, lifted him up out of the pit, and they sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels, which is a weight of silver. Now, eventually, this particular weight of silver will be struck into a coin that's called a shekel coin, and we know that that coin is worth about 2 days' wages, sometimes 3 or 4 days' wages, just depends on the economy. So basically, we're talking about 40 days' wages, several thousand dollars is what they get out of him to be divided among them. And I think it's the six sons of Leah that we're talking about here. So they sell him off. Now he's probably crying and screaming, "Don't do this, I'm your brother," and all of that. And I have no doubt that the brothers are laughing about that and telling the Midianites, "No, he's lying, don't worry about that. He's just a bad slave that we've had around, and we're tired of him. Just take him off of our hands. Yeah, 20 shekels sounds like a good deal. Take him and get rid of him." And so that's exactly what happened. They took Joseph to Egypt. Now, Egypt's about not quite 2 weeks' journey, depending on the route that these guys take and how many stops they might have along the way. By the time Reuben gets back, the camel caravan is long gone. So verse 29, "When Reuben returned to the pit and saw that Joseph was not in the pit, he tore his clothes." That's an ancient symbol of grief. "And he returned to his brothers and he said, 'The boy's gone. And where am I supposed to go?' So he feels responsible. Remember, the leadership responsibilities up to this point has been on him. He was the heir because of being firstborn. And so he still feels responsible that way. And so he's like, what am I supposed to do now? Because he feels he's the one that has to answer to dad. Verse 31. Then they took Joseph's robe, they slaughtered a goat, and they dipped the robe in the blood. So they took the special clothing, kind of ripped it up a little bit. Then they took goat's blood, dipped it around in that goat's blood. And then they sent the robe of many colors, brought it to their father. Now this is where they try to be sly. You know, earlier, whoever it was that suggested killing him said, we'll kill him and then we'll tell dad that a wild animal got him. Well, that's a total lie. So now they've come up with a way that they can let dad make up his own assumptions. Now, it's still deception. So they are still lying by intention, but not with technicality. So they brought this blood-dried, ripped-up coat of many colors, and they said, this we found. Please identify whether it's your son's robe or not. So they come back after being away for a while, and they show dad this ripped up multicolor clothing that has blood dried on it. And they said, tell us, is this your son's robe that we found? So they pretend as if they never saw Joseph. They only found something they suspected belonged to him. And exactly as they thought he would think, he jumped to an assumption, a conclusion. He identified and said, it is my son's robe. A fierce animal has devoured him. Joseph is without doubt torn to pieces. So he assumed that Joseph, on his own, out there in the middle of nowhere, got jumped by maybe a lion, because they had lots of cougar-type lions in this region of the world at this time, or maybe a bear. There were plenty of those as well, that some wild animal had jumped him and ripped his clothing off of him in the process of getting it bloody, and then dragged his corpse away to eat it. And that's why there was no body to be found when they found this robe. Now, all of that is in his mind. All of that is an assumption. But they let him go with that. In fact, that's what they wanted him to go with. And so Jacob tore his garments, put sackcloth on his loins, and mourned for his son many days. So he grieves intensely over the young man, 17 years old, the firstborn son of his beloved late wife, Rachel. So this is just another tragedy to be added to the tragedies of the previous year. It's been a bad 2 years for Jacob. And so he just grieves and grieves and grieves. Verse 35, all his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him. So that would be his 10 boys, 6 of which are almost certainly complicit in the story here. But all 10 of his adult boys, and then his daughters, we know one of them is named Dina, and maybe his daughters-in-law, any other unnamed daughters he has, they all rose up to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. He's like, no, I can't let go. Now, it's not unusual to see 30 days of grief as quite generous a time of grieving over the loss of someone special to you. But the indication seems to be that he just goes on and on and on for month after month, perhaps. He's not doing his work. He's just grieving. And his family tries to intervene and say, you got to let him go, Dad. He's dead. Now, I want you to think about the impact that that had on his brothers, that is, Joseph's brothers, the ones who were involved in this, that maybe Joseph's cries are now being echoed in the cries of their dad, and they can see they've broken him by this choice, and it works on their hearts. I hope that it even softened those hard hearts of Simeon and Levi. But Jacob will not be the same until he sees Joseph again. So he refused to be comforted, and he says, no, I shall go down to Sheol, to my son, mourning. Now, Sheol is the Hebrew word for the unknown or unseen place. It's the place of departed spirits. The belief was, and I think it was quite accurate, that when you died and left your body, your spirit form went to be with all the others that had died previous to you. And according to Luke chapter number 16, where Jesus tells the story about Sheol, Sheol was divided into two parts. The one part was where those who had relationship with God that was good would hang out together with others in that same sort of God relationship, awaiting the final disposition of God's judgment. And their anticipation was that God would be merciful to them, that God would have some plan of saving them. But those that did not have a right relationship with God, the bad people, their spirits would go into this separated area, this area that was divided by a great gulf, a place where there was weeping and gnashing of teeth and grief over the idea that they were lost. They had made choices in life that were bad choices, and they couldn't get those choices all over again. And so when Jacob says here, I will be completely grieving until the day I die and I get to be with Joseph and with Rachel again. That's what he tells them. And thus his father wept for him. Now, meanwhile, for the other side of the story, the Midianites had sold Joseph in Egypt to Potiphar, the officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard. Now, I want to share with you another one of my deviations in personal Bible study away from what some of the commentators say and away from what some of our English Bible versions say. When it talks about this Potiphar being the captain of the guard, the literal word in Hebrew is butcher. Now, somewhere in the past, some commentators, some readers and translators looked at that and went, oh, that is a euphemism for the person who does the executing of military orders and the killing of enemies and things like that for the king. And so they looked at it as being some sort of symbolic title. I disagree. I think it literally means butcher. And we know later in the story of Joseph that he has interaction with members of food services at the palace, a wine steward and a baker. And so why would it not be more reasonable to go with the literal meaning that the Midianites basically sold him to the guy in charge of food services at the palace, Potiphar, the chief butcher of the palace, the guy that told everybody else in food service, this is what we're cooking, and everybody needs to contribute to the meal that's going into Pharaoh, that's going to go into him and his guests. So as we progress with this story, because we're running out of time today, I will substitute butcher or head of food services whenever we come to our English Standard Version phrase, captain of the guard, because I think that is more legitimately the story that we should go for. Now, the next part of the story is kind of a growing up story that happens back in Canaan. And so when we come back at the beginning of next session, the beginning of next week, I want you to have already read chapter 38 and understand that these events in chapter 38 happen at the same time that the Joseph story is going on down in Egypt. But we're going to do this story now because it needs to be completed and prepped for whenever Joseph is finished and comes back to Canaan.